Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
So our speaker tonight, or coordinator tonight, discussion leader, is Umar. It was actually Umar's inspiration to have these four discussion sessions of Branching Streams Flow in the Darkness. And so it's especially fitting that he leads our final discussion of the second part of Chapter 12 tonight. And thank you so much, Umar, for making this happen.
Every day is a good day. This famous koan doesn't mean that you shouldn't complain if you have some difficulty. What it means is don't spend your time in vain. I think most people are spending their time in vain. No, I'm always busy, this they may say. But if they say so, it is a sure sign that they are spending their time in vain. Most people do things with some feeling of purpose, as if they know what they are doing. But even so, I don't think they have the proper understanding of their activity.
When you do something with a purpose based on some evaluation of what is useful or useless, good or bad, more or less valuable, your understanding is not perfect. If you do things that need to be done, regardless of whether the results are good or bad, successful or unsuccessful, that is real practice. If you do things not because of Buddha or truth or yourself or others, but for the things themselves, that is the true way.
I cannot explain this so well. Maybe I shouldn't explain so much. You shouldn't do things just because you feel good, or stop doing things just because you feel bad. Whether you feel good or bad, there is something you should do. If you don't have this kind of feeling when doing something, you have not yet started on our way in the true sense.
I don't know why I am at Tassajara. It is not for you or for myself or even for Buddha or Buddhism. I'm just here. But when I think I have to leave Tassajara in 2 or 3 weeks, I don't feel so good. I don't know why. I don't think it is just because you are my students. I don't have any particular person whom I love so much. I don't know why I have to be here. It is not because I'm attached to Tassajara. I'm not expecting anything in the future in terms of a big monastery or Buddhism, but I don't want to live up in the air. I want to be right here. I want to stand on my feet. The only way to stand on my feet when I am at Tassajara is to sit. That is the reason I am here, to stand on my feet and to sit on my black cushion are the most important things for me. I don't trust anything but my feet and my black cushion. They are my friends, always. My feet are always my friends. When I am in bed, my bed is my friend. There is no Buddha, no Buddhism, no Zazen. If you ask me what is Zazen, my answer will be to sit on my black cushion or to walk with my feet. To stay at this moment in this place is my Zazen. There is no other Zazen. When I am really standing on my feet, I am not lost. For me, that is Nirvana. There is no need to travel to cross mountains or rivers. I am right here in the Dharma world, so I have no difficulty in crossing mountains and rivers. That is how we don't waste time. Moment after moment, we should live right here without sacrificing this moment for the future.
In China, in Sekito's time, Zen Buddhism was very polemical. In the background of the teaching, there was always some controversy. There were many schools of Zen, and they were often lost in dispute. And because they were involved in ideas of right and wrong teaching, or traditional and heretical teaching, they lost the main point of their practice. So Sekito said, don't spend your time in vain. Don't sacrifice actual practice for idealistic practice, trying to attain some kind of perfection or trying to find the traditional understanding as taught by the sixth ancestor. The disciples of the sixth ancestor compiled a sutra of the sixth ancestor in different versions, and each said, this is the sixth ancestor's way. Those who do not have this book are not the descendants of the sixth ancestor. This kind of understanding of Zen prevailed at that time. So Sekito said, I respectfully urge you who study the mystery, don't pass your days and nights in vain, not to be caught by some idea, some selfish understanding of practice or teaching, is to follow our practice in the right way.
This is sometimes called tile polishing practice. Usually, people will polish a mirror, If someone starts to polish tile, you may laugh at him, but polishing a tile makes it shine. Someone may say, oh, this is just a tile. It cannot be a mirror. That is the practice of those who give up easily, thinking, I cannot be a good Zen student, so I have to give up sitting Zazen. They do not realize that the tile is valuable, sometimes more valuable than the mirror. No one can afford to make roof with mirrors. Tiles are very good for making roofs, just as a mirror is important for looking at yourself. That is the tile polishing practice.
As you know, there is a famous story about Nangaku, a disciple of the sixth ancestor, and Basso, his student. Basso was practicing Zazen when Nangaku passed by and asked, what are you doing? I'm practicing Zazen. Why are you doing that? In order to become a Buddha. Ah, it's very nice of you to try to become a Buddha, said Nangaku, and he picked up a tile and started to polish it. So Basso asked with some curiosity, what are you doing? I want to make this tile into a mirror. His disciple asked whether it was possible to make a tile into a mirror. Nangaku answered, you said you are practicing Zazen to be a Buddha, but a Buddha is not always someone who attains enlightenment. Everyone is a Buddha, whether they have attained enlightenment or not. Basso said, I want to become a Buddha through sitting practice. Nangaku said, you speak of practice in the sitting position, but to sit is not always Zen. Whatever you do, that will be Zazen. Basso was lost. Then what would be the appropriate practice?
Nangaku replied, if a cart does not go, what would be the appropriate means to make it go? To hit the cart or to hit the horse? Basso couldn't answer because he was still involved in practicing to attain something. So Nogaku continued his explanation. I cannot tell you all the details, but in short, what he said was, trying to figure out which is right, to whip the horse or to whip the cart is wrong, because the cart and horse are not separate, they are one. Practice and enlightenment are one, like the cart and horse. So if you do actual physical practice, that is also enlightenment. We call practice based on enlightenment real practice that has no end. And we call enlightenment that starts with practice and is one with practice, beginningless enlightenment. If someone starts to practice, there is enlightenment. And where there is enlightenment, there is also practice. There is no enlightenment without practice. If you don't stay on this spot, realizing your position, then you are not practicing our way. So you are wasting your time if you are sacrificing your present practice for some future attainment. That is not real practice.
Sukhita was also a direct disciple of the sixth ancestor, and he knew the sixth ancestor's practice very well. So when Kathaku Jini and his disciples started to denounce the northern school of Jinshu, Sukhita felt bad about their being attached to some idea without realizing what the practice is. His understanding was carried by Dogen Zenji in the 5 centuries later. Dogen extended this understanding not just logically, but widely, but more widely with more feeling in a more poetic way through his tenacious thinking mind. Some people say the Sandokai is not such a good poem because it is too philosophical. It may be so if you don't understand the background of Sukhita's teaching, and if your mind does not penetrate through his words. We say to read the back of the paper is not just the printed character, but the other side of the page. It is important for us to understand Sukhita's Sandokai in this way. So, one of the things that really got me was this thing that Suzuki Roshi talked about when he said that every day is a good day. And that was one of the first things I heard when I came to this country. Somebody said that to me when I was sad. They said, no. He said, every day is a good day. You know, it is us, we make it good or bad, we make it bad. We put things on it and make it good or bad, but every day is a very good day. And and I have seen personally myself that, you know, there have been times when I was sitting, I have said to myself, what's the use of this? Why can't I just do it quickly? This is boring, and you know, there's a lot of desperation, there's a lot of resistance, there's a lot of depression sometimes comes up, sadness. I won't call it depression anymore. I'll call it sadness comes up. But what I've come to realize is just sitting through all of this is what our practice is. And this is the only way that we can get through the days. Been sitting for a few years now, actually more than 10. But this is what I'm coming to realize more and more. And the biggest problem that I feel that we all share is underneath all this desperation, depression, or cleverness is a fear that I'm not good enough. You know, I'm not enough. And this is, I always feel this and this comes up. And there is so in going along with what Suzuki Roshi is talking about over here is like the purpose and the feeling of purpose. I've sat in the beginning, I did sit with a purpose, and it was very selfish. It was just because I wanted to get rid of my sadness. And but now I don't have a purpose. I just sit for the sake of sitting. I'm not looking for anything. I don't need anything. It is just sitting. And it's really interesting that I was reading one of the discussions of this book. And this is from page 185, where he says, where Suzuki Roshi says, so we will practice on this way, arranging carefully and mixing together and chewing and analyzing to see what is going on. What am I doing? in this way, analyzing in a bright light and mixing our, in a dark room over and over, our practice goes on endlessly. At the end of the Sandokai, Sukhito says that if you go on in this way, step by step, it is not a matter of a 1,000-mile trip, but a 1-mile trip. So it again, it just comes back to coming back to every breath. So I wanted to open up the floor to people, see if anybody has any questions or would like to share something. Yes, David. Dave, sorry.
I think the thing that struck me most about this reading is the realization that I've always kind of misunderstood the famous story of Nangaku and Basso and polishing the tile. The thing that really struck me is when he said, he described true practice, and he said, this is sometimes called tile pack polishing practice. And my first reaction was, wait, what? I've always thought that that story meant that polishing a tile was kind of a stupid waste of time. But as Suzuki Roshi says, the tile is a perfectly good tile. You polish it, it may make it a shinier tile, but it's still a good tile. And it's the, your delusion is trying to make it into a mirror. And in the same way, our practice is what it is, not because of some abstract future goal that the practice is supposed to attain, but because, I guess, as Suzuki Roshi once put it, someone asked him why we practice, and he said, because it is our inmost desire to do so. It's simply an expression of our true nature. And it's not that we have to do it for some reason. All we have to do is get out of the way and let actual practice happen. So I really value this reading tonight because of the fact that I think it really helps me understand. I thought I understood what was going on in this story, and now I realize that when he called it a true practice, tile polishing practice, I was so struck, and now I think I'm beginning to understand why.
Yeah, he also uses another analogy in the later discussions where he says that he points at the cup of water that's sitting in front of him, and he says, you know, here is a cup of water, cup with water. The water is water and the cup is a cup. If the cup wants to become water, then that's not possible. If the water wants to become the cup, that is not possible, and it's interdependent on each other. Just like Nangaku's question was dependent on Basso's question, or the other way around. But it's that's really interesting, and you're absolutely right that, you know, that story, reading it to, it took me 2 or 3 times to read that story to start to understand what he's really talking about. Is like everything is right here, right now. And, you know, and we need to pay attention. And we get in our own way. We get caught up by, I think one of the biggest issues is that we do get caught up with our own thinking. Yeah. I also like the idea where he says, but I don't want to live up in the air. I want to be right here. I want to stand on my feet. And it's also about, he said, I want to sit on my black cushion, and that is the most important thing to me. Atasahara. This is what it comes down to. Yeah. Simplest things in life are the best, right? Anything else anybody would like to share? Have any questions?
Hi, it's Diane.
Yeah, Diane.
I'm not visible tonight.
Okay, that's fine.
It's really quite simple, isn't it? But we want to make it so complicated. And so, like, we have to go somewhere else or do something more sophisticated. Somehow we can't believe that something so simple as being right here, right now, fully present, sitting, is it. We want more. We always want more. And we're always looking beyond our cushion or beyond our practice or sometimes expecting a result instead of being with what is fully. And it's simple, but it is so very, very difficult. And to me, that's our practice, is just to be with what is and being fully there and open to whatever comes instead of always looking somewhere else or beyond. Thank you for this reading tonight, Omar.
Yeah, just when you said being here and this should be enough, I just keep thinking of what is happening in the world right now, and where we're going heading towards augmented realities and metaverses and all this stuff, and we're going to leave our own reality and go and enter some other kind of reality, and that'll be another kind of thing that we'll enter into. So it's hard enough to, I think, deal with what is going on around us, and then we have to take on another sort of how would you say, another kind of world, or to live in another kind of world and figure out its rules and regulations and all the stumbling blocks.
Yeah, they're all there all the time, aren't they?
They just take
on a new configuration, but I don't think there's really anything new.
Yeah.
In that sense.
There is something there to be said about this, because I'm in 2006 I had gone to see a Chinese doctor, and he was a practitioner of Chinese medicine, and he was also practicing Dalai Lama's Buddhism, Buddhism, and he was very angry with Suzuki Roshi. And I said to him, "Why? What is your beef with Suzuki Roshi?" And he said, "Well, he cleaned it up." And I said, what do you mean he cleaned it up? And so he took out everything and he said, "Just sit."
Exactly.
And I said, "Isn't that a good thing?" He said, no, people have to go through discussions and people have to have arguments, and we don't let people sit till they're mentally ready." And I was like, I thought that was very much like, "Oh, I'm going to hold my ear like this, instead of this way." And so I found him to be very confusing, that he was saying, "No, you have to do this and you have to do that." And he said, "Suzuki Roshi, it's just like Suzuki Roshi took a broom and he said, 'No, none of this, just sit down, and that's it. No nonsense.'" And that was it. So it was just funny that it just came back to me that his,
Right on. Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, Dan.
Hi, Omar. Yeah. Something that I'm thinking about is the importance of insight and where that comes from. And a question for you is, in your commentary that you mentioned, you said that analysis, Suzuki Roshi or someone said in the commentary something about analysis being important, that we had to analyze something.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we talk about it, about just sitting, as if it's like without any thought. And I have thinking, and I want to have insight. And how that unfolds is a occurs with my thought as well.
Hmm.
And I'm not saying that I have to in Zazen always be thinking, but, you know, we have minds and they're there. And in fact, most of the time, our minds are running the show. So I don't think it's that simple. To me, I don't think it's that simple. I think it's a dialectic. It's something that just, you know, it keeps moving. And for me, it's not something that I don't know if I'll ever be able to put that to bed, you know, and I don't know that I don't know that that I'm supposed to. I just find that as being, I haven't been able to do it yet. Let's put it that way. And so I think just sitting's important. I think also, but I don't know that I've done that very well. And so it's sort of throwing out a polemic there, you know. I mean, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, but I think that this is clear and that it's difficult to do. And I think maybe that's what Diane said as well.
Yeah. And
then as we get insight, I think also the analysis, you know, like it's important for us to see patterns, for instance. You know, I mean, God, I've been doing that over and over. I don't need to do that anymore. And part of that is your mind, you know, your thinking mind identifying like, my goodness. And that may have that insight may actually spring up from Zazen. So it's sort of a wonderful interplay of this deep practice that also does involve insight and thinking. And so, and not that you're saying otherwise, but I think I just from my point of view, it's both those things.
Hmm. So you're saying it's thinking and non-thinking?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I think that things come up from non-thinking that make you think and make you realize something that I don't have to behave that way anymore. I don't need that emotion. And emotions and thoughts are so closely aligned, right? Mm-hmm. And so, but that doesn't come from logic. You know, there is some logic involved with thinking and seeing patterns and thinking through it. But I think it's an interplay. And I mean, sometimes I read Zen stuff and it makes me think like, oh, thinking is wrong, you know? And it's like, no. Thinking is part of what we do, you know? It's part of the process. And so that's how I see it. I don't want to simplify things too much.
Simplify things too much.
I mean, I think that saying this is all simple is for me, it doesn't ring true.
What doesn't ring true? Can you clarify a little bit for me? I'm not quite catching on to.
So to be specific, we'll sit and we can just sit and we can have, you know, realizations or emptiness. Let's say realization comes up and you have some experience like, wow, you know, what does that mean? How does that affect my life? All right. And the interplay with the life, your mind gets involved with your life, right? I mean, you see, for instance, just around patterns. I mean, one of the things that I've seen here is how to behave in a more subtle way with Zazen. Okay. Mm-hmm. And to do that takes me thinking about, my gosh, you know, even memory. Look how I behaved before. Oh, my wife said I'm behaving a little differently now. That's good to know, you know. You know, and maybe I don't need to do this, you know, and you do want to, you know, evaluate how other people perceive you. And there's a lot of input you take that doesn't happen just on your cushion. And the cushion helps, but life is a lot more than just being on the cushion. And there's a lot of input and we use our minds to evolve.
Okay. Well, so what you're saying is, even though you're not on the cushion, you can, your thinking is important, and it's not just about getting rid of thinking.
Yeah. I think when I read a lot of, and I'm not sure that Suzuki Roshi is necessarily saying that here, but when I read and I hear these discussions, it's like, oh, let's simplify things. I think that that's a useful approach, but I think insight comes from difficulties, and it does come from analysis as well. So I think this is more complex than just sitting. My life is more complex than just sitting. It's an aspect of my life.
So do you use thinking for problem solving, or do you use thinking for thinking?
I'm not sure what I don't. I use it to problem solve. Yeah. And I also use it, but I mean, know who I am. I think about that too.
Okay.
For me to expand my awareness or to behave in more desirable ways, or to see how I impact other people and how I can do it more skillfully, that takes thought for me. That's not just intuition. And so what I read this, and maybe my assumption here is I read this and when I hear the talk, it's about simplifying and about it's sort of an intuitive approach to life. And I think that that's part of it, but I think that analysis and thinking is important as well.
This is interesting. Because you said that you think about who you are, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But when it comes to, if you read the further discussions in here, Suzuki Roshi actually compares the light and the dark, and he said light is where you're able to see everything, and darkness is where you're not able to see anything at all. And there are places, like he says, okay, I'm sitting, when he was giving this lecture, I believe they were in the old Zendo, which was outside, almost outside, right next to the rushing river at Sahara. But it was dark, and they were lighting everything with candles, and he couldn't see everybody's faces. He said, in the dark, you can see a little bit, but you can't see everything. But this is where he's comparing thinking to seeing everything in the light, and non-thinking to seeing everything in the dark. And darkness is, the way that I understood it, it's almost like I had read this metaphor about space, that there's a black hole and there's a blank space in between two planets, and out of nowhere appears another planet out of a black hole. And scientists are still trying to figure out how this happens. I don't know. I haven't followed up on it, so I don't know what the science is, but this is what I remember. But as far as I'm concerned, that's how I see sitting zazen, is like seeing things pop straight out. I remember me and Hernan were, last time when we were in at the Sahara, like I think it was 19, the last day, they said to me and Hernan that we need some help. I said, what do you need help with? So they said there was this big glass door that was like 8 feet tall by 4 feet wide and 8 feet tall. They said, oh, we need to move this. And Hernan said, oh, we only have like 10 minutes. How are we going to do this? I have no idea. I looked at him. We can just pick it up and take it. And he said, oh, this is going to be very dangerous to pick it up and take it. So so he just looked at me and said, wait a minute, I know what to do. And he said, I remember I was working in the shed, and there is something in the shed. And he went and grabbed the wheelbarrow. The wheelbarrow that he grabbed was he got it thinking that it's okay. But when we put this big glass door on the wheelbarrow, it had no air in it. So it just completely sank to the wheel, just sank to the floor. So I held the glass door from one side and he held it from the other side while it was on the wheelbarrow, and we slowly, gently pushed it back up to where it needed to be so they could actually push it, pick it up and take it from there. So it was just like, it was a flash of insight that came to her nan, and he was able to, you know, it was just like, and we had sat that morning. That was mm-hmm. the real clincher about that whole thing, that we had sat that morning, and we were after sitting that morning, we did two sittings. He had such a clear mind that he said, oh, I know exactly what to do, how we can solve this problem. So for me, insight is like that, how we can solve some kind of problem, the problem that we're having. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think creativity does work that way. I mean, it's not a thought process.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, I.
So.
Yeah. So I. Yeah.
I think it is important. I think personally, thinking is important. Without thinking, books won't be published. Without thinking, newspapers won't be written. We won't be reading. We will be looking at blank screens on the internet, and people won't be talking. But this is all. Human beings are amazing. You know, I was thinking about that the other day, that human beings are amazing. If you look around, just have a look around yourself in the world. Everything was created in this mind first. This, you know, 8 by 8 inch square. And from there came everything. So it was, everything popped out of here. Everything that we have in this world that we have created, we created tools, from tools we created the world, from the world we created, I mean, we've created buildings and bridges and feats, we've done feats of engineering. And the other day, Travis and some of us were sitting there and talking about, I think Brenda just came back from Egypt. So we were talking about the pyramids, how the pyramids are amazing. And they were, you know, people were rolling these huge slabs of stone on round pieces of wood. And that's engineering too. Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah. So thinking is important. But it's, for me, I think where I am in my life, I think creativity has become more important than thinking. You know, thinking does help solve problems. Yeah.
Okay. I don't mean to take all the conversation.
No,
thank you.
It's okay.
Thank you. No, it's an ongoing thought or experience for me. Yeah. Thank you.
Dave?
Just sort of in response to what Dan was saying, and also what you've been saying, Umar, it seems like there is a clear clear two-way interaction between thinking and practice, but it's not a symmetrical thing. It's not a chicken and egg kind of which comes first and all that. It seems to me that we're talking about the harmony of difference and equality here, after all, right? I mean, mm-hmm. It's not that our practice says that thinking is bad any more than it says that your small self is evil and must be destroyed. It's that those things have their place, and you shouldn't be confused about what that place is. And in particular, your thinking shouldn't be somehow the precursor to your practice.
Mm-hmm.
Don't practice because you think it's going to turn you into a Buddha.
Mm.
Practice because it's your nature to do so. And if
ideas
and insights flow from that fertile ground, that's not something to despise. That's fine. That can be valuable in its own right. But your thinking isn't a precondition for your practice.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let it get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's the point here.
Yeah. Thank you, Dave. Yes, Brenda.
I think this is a really interesting and important discussion because, in Western society, we live by the product of our thinking, right? And so we're raised from very early on to kind of, to generate thoughts and to examine those thoughts and look at the validity of the thoughts. But I think, it's interesting, like, how are those thoughts being generated and what is, and often I think what he's referring to here is that there's a deeper, basically the area of experience, of really physical experience and sort of presence in the world that is almost the antecedent of thinking. So it's like if you're, that being in the body and how you are in the body is also, it's an antecedent to thought generation in a sense. Mm-hmm. Right. So if we're tired, if we're sleepy, we know that our thoughts are very different, right? In the morning mm-hmm. and at night. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's really kind of getting us grounded in that being to actually have maybe healthier thinking, that.
So what is your diagnosis for a healthier thinking?
Oh, it's good to sit.
It's good to sit. Okay. Yeah, so that's really interesting. Yeah, it's interesting because I was reading this and now Dan was talking about another piece in here that is in the book is talking about things is like arranging food on your plate. Every morning, our students arrange food beautifully in each dish. But fortunately or unfortunately, when I chew it, it is all mixed up in my mouth. And I just have the taste of food. No color, no beauty, no sesame salt or brown rice. It is even more mixed up when it reaches my tummy. I don't even know what it is. When things are in full activity, there is no idea of good and bad, this or that. It is good to see food arranged in different dishes. It is good to think about food, your life, or the nature of man and woman. But even though you think about these things, it doesn't mean much unless you really have the taste of them in your life. Unless you chew it up, mix it all together and swallow it, your life doesn't make much sense. And I thought this was like really amazing that he just took this and, and he brought it home for me and said, okay, you have to experience life just like you have to experience Zazen. You have to experience everything, and this is what it is like to, we can talk about things, but if you don't experience it, it's not there. And in one of the lectures, he actually said that, we sit because we need to find out our own true nature. And to me, that was really interesting, that it wasn't about this whole idea that we have with selfish kind of sitting, that if I do this, I'll be able to achieve something or get somewhere or become someone, or all of this is not important. What is important is sitting and walking, meditation, and that's it. And that's what it comes down to.
But I also agree with Dan, to just continue on the previous point, that it is good to sit, but it's also important to think about the effects that one has on people and, how one is acting in society, and all those things are important to consider.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there have been times when, I've made a lot of mistakes. I mean, so I've been angry and I've been pissed off and I don't understand. And Muslims, most of the time it comes from my stupidity of not understanding, or my ignorance that I don't understand. But I have what I've started to doing is just more and more I'm trying to do is step back and say I made a mistake again, like Dan was saying. You know, just I have my issues, and I have to constantly step back from my issues and look at them and say, what is going on here? What is underneath? What is the deeper thing that's going on that is affecting me so that I don't make this mistake again? You know, because when we think about hurting other people, we really don't hurt other people. We hurt ourselves and the people who we love. And that is the biggest problem that we don't understand about. I'm starting to understand that too. So it's a journey. It's just a journey. You know, we're all in this together.
I think it's, you know, the concept that comes to mind is flexibility. In terms of, like, if because of sitting, you know, one says that my way is the only way, then, you know, then that might not be so helpful. But if you're able through sitting to be able to have sort of a soft and flexible mind, then that would be helpful, right? Because you also have your own, you know, our own backgrounds, our own histories, which, mm-hmm. you know, may cause us to think in certain ways that are, mm-hmm. are fixed, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, that is true. It is very true. And one of the things that I've come to understand more and more is that one of the biggest things that human beings share is we're afraid that somebody or someone is going to take something away from us. And it's a very primordial thing that we have this fear, and that makes us very, very defensive and very angry. And that's what I'm working on right now, is dealing with that kind of fear underneath it all. That's what I sit with most of the time. It's like I feel like I'm digging and I'm digging and I'm digging to see how far I can go to, you know. So I keep thinking of what Suzuki Roshi used to say, that, you know, yesterday's behaviors are just, or yesterday's weeds are used for today's plant. So I keep thinking of it in that way, you know. Yeah. Any other questions? Any other points that somebody wants to make? Yes. I've put the book in the link. You can click on the link and download the whole book. It is there for educational purposes, and there are two more discussions in the back of the book. I think if people read them by themselves, it'll be really good. So very good discussions where Suzuki Roshi is actually talking to his students. And it just feels like as if it was these talks were done yesterday. Doesn't feel like they're that old, and just our problems are the same. Human beings on some level are very similar to each other. So if you do get a chance, do download it and read it. Okay.
Yeah, thank you very much, Umar, for leading the discussion tonight, and for, as I said earlier, inspiring us to actually do this for these couple of sessions. This has been very good, and really appreciate it.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N. D-O.org.